This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests, trying to make the more difficult world a little less difficult to live with. Relationships are not easy, are they? They are not easy. Tough. You think something's going to go on. You think it's going to be one way and then it's another. You meet this guy and he's wonderful and he's amazing and he's everything you could imagine. And then he's got this wrong with him and that wrong with him, plus the fact that, you know, he's a priest. God knows. Charles Augustine St. Beuve once said, "Tell me who admires you and loves you, and I will tell you who you are." Victor Hugo said, "The greatest happiness in life is the conviction that we are loved, loved for ourselves, or rather loved in spite of ourselves." And Eric Fromm, in Love, the paradox occurs that two beings become one and yet remain two. Now, it is exactly to that point that we're going to talk today. We have with us Robbie Gass and Judith Gass. Now, let me just tell you who these folks are. Many years ago, I used to do my road show, which was me giving lectures around the country. And I would give lectures, workshops, seminars. And somewhere I'd always be bumping into, wherever I was going, there was Robbie Gass doing these workshops of his and presenting his music, which is world known as some of the first and best New Age music. But Robbie and Judith have gotten together and started doing a series of workshops around the country. And everybody's talking about what a thing it is, because what they care about is something about the spiritual path in love and in relationships. Some people say sex is sex. Other people say sex is love. Other people say sex is spirituality. Then some people say love is spiritual, or other people say love is sex. And then other people say love is sex and spiritual. And, you know, everybody's got their own idea of it. So the real question is, what's it all about? What's it all about? So at this time when so many relationships seem to be failing after 30 years of marriage, something seems to be changing. And the best example of it I could do is pull on this couple, Robbie Gass and Judith Gass, who seem to be flourishing at this point. So, Robbie and Judith, welcome to WBAI. Robbie, are you there?
I think so. Can you hear us?
Yeah, Robbie's real clear.
He's real clear.
Oh, now here comes Judith. All right.
Okay. I'm just going to talk right out there.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, it's not easy, too, because we're talking from, you know, phones and remote phones, taking them up, sending them over through the satellites, getting them into an ISDN line, sending it back down to Earth. We must be traveling hundreds of thousands of miles with these sounds to put them all together to get one program. It's kind of amazing.
It is amazing.
Amazing that we could do it.
It's a little bit like that with marriage, too, I think, Armand.
That's the whole point. Good.
You know, we're coming from, you know, who we are, which is a product of our life circumstances, our childhood, our ancestry, our lineage. And, you know, there's obviously the famous person kind of talking about men are from, you know, Mars and women are from Venus. I mean, it is sometimes like trying to reach across a vast distance to really find each other in marriage.
What do you think the greatest problem in trying to find each other in marriage is?
I think one of the things that really goes on is that you gave this wonderful description of you meet, you fall in love, and then what happens in there? And we meet very often in what I would call a field of projection. We see someone, but we're often not seeing them. We're seeing our imaginings of them. We're seeing what we're wanting. And after a period of time in marriage, in any intimate relationship, the masks or covers start to dissolve. There's no way you can live with someone over an extended period of time and keep hiding, you know, presenting just your best foot forward. And so we start to see what's behind that, who's behind that. And we all come as complete packages with many gifts, as well as woundings and flaws and the history of our family, as Robert mentioned. And so we start layering, going down through the layers, to really start to know who's there. And in that process, we come into difficulty, but that is also the area that is richest and ripest for for spiritual development and really the deepening of what I would call really authentic love.
Now, wait a minute. You get down through the layers and you begin to see the handicaps and the problems that the other person has.
Yeah,
and you get down through the makeup and you see them in the morning when they're not wearing, you know, wearing your T-shirts and 90s, and suddenly things don't look as attractive as before. And you get down to that level and the romance begins to fade a little bit. But you say it is only in that layer that you're going to get the real stuff. Is that what you're saying?
You want to pick up on that, Robert?
Well, let me add to that a little bit, Armin.
We should tell everybody that these two people are divorced and living in separate houses.
actually, 31 years and getting better all the time.
And they're in separate rooms while they're talking. That's how they're doing it. That's why you'll hear these little, oh, didn't you notice that? Go ahead. Go ahead, Robbie.
I think what also happens is you get to see the parts of yourself that you sometimes don't want to see. You know, you have this picture, oh, I'm this generous person, I'm so kind. And, you know, you get those reflections out in the world, oh, yes, you're so successful, you're so this. And all of a sudden you find yourself kind of being very uptight and kind of not so nice to this person that you love more than anything in the world. And you see that's part of the reflection that comes back, because it doesn't look so good all of a sudden.
Yeah, and what parts do people usually see that they don't like?
Well, I think it's particularly, you know, again, I think it said that we all have a way we'd like to be. That's sort of like our ego's picture of who we'd like to be, and it differs. You know, for me,
I think
to be a loving person. That's my desire. Yes, I'm this loving person. So I go out on the road like you are. I do these opening the heart workshops, and everyone looks at me like, oh, Robbie, you're so loving. I want to be like you when I grow up. And then all of a sudden, I found myself on there kind of like, you know, being not so loving to Judith. And it's kind of at odds with my own image of myself. And yet, there's the truth. Here I am being ungenerous, unkind.
That's a tough one, isn't it, Robbie? I mean, just, I'd like to use the old phrase man to man. That's a little antiquated now, but really, they do say mano a mano, that we could get away with that.
Right.
But man to man, as a loving being, every man I know would like to see himself as this loving character.
Exactly.
And then they see themselves being mean,
mm-hmm.
right? Being intolerant, being scolding. It's like they become their fathers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like they take the worst part of whatever was laid on them,
mm-hmm.
and they lay it on their mates.
And what we do then is we blame the other person. Well, if you weren't this way, then I wouldn't be so unloving. You know, we think the problem is our partner. If we could get them to change, if only they wouldn't be so whatever, then everything would be fine.
And it's hard to even buy that, you know? As the person who is saying it, it's hard to really believe that it's their fault. You could say it's their fault, but you don't really believe it. You could tell your friends it's their fault.
Right.
You know, I think you're already on the road to a healthy relationship when you can have even the littlest glimpse that it actually isn't their fault. I think a lot of relationships get stuck and fall down in people putting all their attention and energy to if he or she would just be different, if they would be more this way, less this way, do this more, do that less, then I would be happy. And even to get to the place, Armand, where you're starting to recognize that, hey, you know, I have something to do with this. There was a wonderful story. We were teaching, and we've been teaching this work for over 25 years together, and we were down in the Virgin Islands and did some work with a gentleman there, and he, I saw him after the workshop session, and he was sitting looking quite serious on the beach, and I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, you know, I went through the process in the workshop, and I went through 10 different relationships that I had, which all failed. And I thought to myself, what's going on? And then I realized, I'm the common denominator. It's what I've brought here that has actually been the consistent problem, because all the women were different. And that's when we start to really look to ourselves and what Robert and I would refer to as the concept of, or the principle of self-responsibility. That when we can start really looking at what is our piece of the equation, what's our inner work, what's our emotional and spiritual homework, that things can really begin to shift in a healthy way in a relationship.
A lot of men I know, Judith, say, well, I just see it. I'm not fit to be with anybody. I'm going to be a loner. And they could get by in the world being loners because, you know, it's a lot easier for men than it is for women out there being alone. And so they go out and they strike out and they kind of maybe swear off it and they say, I'll just take whatever's convenient. But I think that they're not the only ones who are questioning, and I think they're not the only ones who see themselves as handicapped in relationships. I think women sometimes also, and this is a question I'm asking actually, do you think that women will own the question, I have handicaps in loving, as much as men will. Men will look at it and eventually they'll just say, yeah, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to be tender. I don't know how to listen for a long time. I don't know how to remember all these holidays and anniversaries. I don't know that. It's not part of my nature. I don't know how to sit there for long times and talk about small things and feelings. Men will admit to that. Women, on the other hand, I believe, are so convinced that it's the men who are handicapped that they kind of get off it. You know, they say, well, you know, it's not me. Now it's only them. It's all poor. I'm looking for a man who's capable of a relationship.
Judith, I think you better field this one.
I better field this one, honey. All right, I'll do it.
I'll play backup.
So, you know, we call this getting off the blame game with each other. And, yes, I think one of the ways in which the dynamic that you're addressing does happen is that in general, and I'm always a little wary about making large generalizations, but in general, women come into relationship with better developed social and relatedness skills. We're trained from very young how to notice people. You know, even whether or not we've had children or not, it's kind of in our genetic makeup to pay attention, to notice other, to nurture and care for. And so I think many women do carry a sense of superiority and in often cases do come in with better communication skills. But then that's where we get off kilt, because then we start doing one-upsmanship with our men and making them wrong rather than really finding a way of real effective partnership where we both take responsibility for our piece of our own neurotic patterning, our own wounds, our own incapacity to accept other people as they are and not try to make men into clones of women. And I think this has happened. This is an interesting thing, I think, that a lot in the kind of alternative, quote, new age world, a lot of men have worked very hard and very beautifully to become soft and accepting and more nurturing and more present. And then women are feeling, well, where's the guy? You know, we want the guy. We want a man who's strong enough to meet us in our passionate nature, in our power, who's able to stand kind of in the fire of our emotional changes, which for women tend to be much stronger for men. We want a man who can stand with that and still be present and love us.
Well, maybe that, Judith, let's try this hypothesis.
Go ahead.
Maybe if you say, if you give me the new age guy who is soft and tender, and he's all now he's on a level where I am, now I no longer have an excuse to hide from myself. Give me back that conflict with that strong, powerful guy who's going to be at odds with me. Maybe the very need for that that intensely self-owned masculinity is because the battle has to continue. You see, a lot of men, on the other hand, will also say, give me a woman who could stand on her own. Give me a woman who's strong and who could be equal with me. As if they are saying, give me somebody who doesn't surrender. Please give me a resistance point all the time.
Right. And, you know, we get into some very interesting territory because I think it's both true. And we do need strong, independent partners, and we need people who can be in partnership, and this is for both men and women. I don't know if I agree that the battle needs to go on, but I often think that arenas of conflict, particularly power conflict, shutting down of emotional energy between couples, comes because people don't know how to actually stay in touch, own their piece of things, and how to process effectively together. And that starts deadening the positive passion. And I think when there's not an outlet for the positive passion, which would certainly in one case be sexuality, the passion will look for another way of expression. And that often comes into either directly fighting and argumentative and power conflict, or sometimes goes underground into what we would refer to as a shutting down or a deadening of the emotional and spiritual energetic life of the couple.
Simon, you know the old bumper sticks from the 60s, make love, not war?
Uh-huh.
There's some truth in the level of relationship here that you're speaking about. We certainly notice in our life that when we're really making love a lot, both physically but also just that, you know, erotic and passionate exchange of energy, we don't fight so much. And when it's not happening, we fight a lot.
Maybe because you're exhausted.
I don't think so. And, you know, when we're saying making love, certainly sexuality is an important component, and many marriages start to founder on that. But also just making love many times a day, from the way you greet each other to how you say goodbye to taking a couple of breaths and 30 seconds in the busyness of passing each other to stop and look in each other's eyes and just a little kiss or saying, I love you, have a good day. We start to take each other for granted. And like anything that we want to thrive in our lives, we can't take it for advantage. We will pour energy into a work project, but we neglect and forget to take care and nurture the energy of relationship.
It's the idea of relationship being a verb rather than a noun. So we think of relationship as a possession. It's a thing I have. We don't have a relationship. What we have is a living, breathing thing, and we need to pay attention to the actual life and the moment of being in relationship with each other, not this possession like, oh, I have a wife. You know, to make love with our words, to have relationship be real, to be right here.
So it doesn't suffice for either party to say, well, I paid attention to you last week. It's an ongoing, living, breathing process.
So people get upset, defensive, and angry with the person they love the most in the world. Why with the person you love the very, very most? You see this beautiful being, right, who's sitting opposite you. You just can't imagine feeling anything but tenderness and love towards this person, and you wind up like you're on steroids, you know? You wind up, you know, like this male PMS, and this, all this stuff comes around, and you're just mean to each other. How does that compute? You know, you wouldn't do that with your puppy. You wouldn't do it with your kitten.
Your puppy probably wouldn't nag you either, you know?
No, but even when they're not nagging.
No, we got it. Go ahead, Rob.
What do you think?
We use the phrase, it's not an original phrase, but used a lot of getting hooked with each other. There's a way in which when you're in a long-term relationship with people, they get in under your skin. And so someone else out in the world might say the same words, and you say, eh. You know, when your partner says it, it's like, it's almost like it's in your gut all of a sudden. It just really grates at you. They get you. They mean too much to us. It's like whether we like it or not, we get very dependent on our partners and on their approval and disapproval. And so they crinkle their eye the wrong way. They get that little tight edge in their voice, and all of a sudden we feel ourselves start to collapse inside. And I can't let them get away with that. Whereas someone else in the world could say that, we go, eh, so they're off to, you know, big deal. Why is it so? You know, it just is. And we could get very psychological and talk about projection, and we get them confused with our mothers and our fathers, which is true. But the most important thing to realize is that it is so. They matter almost too much sometimes. Just the boundaries between us and those we love get very thin. The membrane gets very thin.
Kind of get under your skin, just like you're saying. It gets to a point where they have the power to hurt you. And I think that's, you know, that's part
exactly.
of one of the... Here's a couple of definitions of love that a couple of people have come up with. I like mine the best. That a real definition of love, or one definition of love, is two kids who are battered and wounded, who are in a crawl space. Crawl space is that space in between floors. You know about that out there.
Right.
They don't know about it in Manhattan because we don't have many crawl spaces.
They've rented it already.
Right.
They sublet it.
But you're in a crawl space, and you're in there, and you believe that's the only place that's safe. And a lot of kids like to hang out in these crawl spaces, but you're hurt, and you've been a little wounded by people, by your family, and you're in a crawl space, and you're reaching around, and you're looking around, and you're reaching out your fingers. And suddenly there's another kid in the crawl space, and that other kid is reaching and blindly touches your fingers. When two people can touch in the crawl space, I say then they're in love.
Very sweet.
Now, there's a woman named Brenda Lukman who wrote a book recently called Why Men Leave. And here's what she says. She says men leave relationships because they feel they cannot make their mates happy. Now, there's a big issue here because, number one, whoever makes anybody happy. But the perception of the men she interviewed was they felt powerless to turn the other person's mood into a good mood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason they leave. Then they go out and they find some younger woman or other woman who says to them, everything you do pleases me and makes me happy, and you make me happier every minute I'm with you. Mm-hmm. So, of course, where do they go? They go there.
Yes.
So this issue seems to be an important one in relationships. Would you talk about it a little bit?
You know, certainly for me, if I look back at my own history with Judith, when I met her, you know, I was living out that myth in some way. She was really cool, and she also seemed unhappy in some ways, and she would cry, and I had this feeling like I was going to make her happy, And that was sort of the template in my mind, you know, in my mythology for the beginning of a relationship. Somehow I'm going to make this woman happy, and I would try and I would try. And then she wouldn't be happy, and I'd be so frustrated. I would feel like it was my fault. And then sometimes I was already feeling like it was my fault, and then all she has to do is, like, say anything, you know, like, in any way that's, I'm not perfect, it's my fault. And, like, it would feel like my raison d'etre, my meaning for existence was crumbling because I couldn't make her happy.
But let's talk about the collusion that happens from the other side there, too, because, you know, continuing to use the example of our relationship, and we've been together 31 years, and we were very young when we met. We were just 20, barely 21 when we met. And the collusion in that dynamic is the woman's belief, I mean, we're using this, it could work the other way, but the woman's belief that it's her husband's or her partner's job or her lover's job to provide her happiness. And it's only when we can actually mature inside so that we understand that the source of our well-being never comes from anyone else or from anything else. It really comes from inside us. It's about our own connection to life, to God, to our spiritual nature, to our purpose. And we start feeling filled from the inside, and we get off of putting that responsibility on anyone else, that you actually start to have live in a range where actually true partnership can really effectively happen.
Well, we need some formula here. How do you do it? I mean, you know, it sounds like such a good in theory. There's an expression we have here called a gitnip, you know, G-I-T-N-I-P. It means good in theory, not in practice. You've got to get some things to become, go beyond the gitnip. How does someone knowing all of this transcend it? How do you get to that point? Because here, you know, James Baldwin, who is not one of the Baldwin brothers, but the famous James Baldwin once said, love does not begin and end the way we seem to think it does. Love is a battle. Love is a war. Love is a growing up. And so in his phrase, what he's saying is at the beginning, it feels like you've got to do something to get in the middle of it. You got to have the fight. And as I hear it, it's not a battle with the other person. It's a battle with yourself. Love is a war within yourself, and love is a growing up.
I would like to kind of let you and your listeners know how they can handle this. Yeah. Really, it's pretty easy. We've developed a formula. It's kind of three easy steps. We have an 800 number. We take MasterCard or Visa, and it can be, no. Actually, Armin. Actually, see, I mean, there are a lot of books out in the market which make it sound like it's easy.
Well, wait, before you do that, I tell you what we're going to do. Within 5 minutes, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to actually go into the steps of it. Because I want to go into the steps of it with you, too, because I appreciate you offering that to our BAI audience, you know?
I know, Armin, people... but I just say that I was being a little facetious in that.
And that's just send in the credit card.
Yeah.
Right. No, but there is a formula.
Because part of, I think, growing up in this case means getting that it's not some magic formula, and it's not that your relationship becomes perfect. Part of what we learned over 30 years of being together is a certain kind of patience and ease with each other. Like, we're all doing the best we can. We already are doing the best we can. Judith does the best she can. I'm doing the best I can. And it's not that we're going to all of a sudden get some quick formula and fix everything. It's learning to live with a certain amount of paradox, a certain amount of conflict is part of relationship, and learning how to relax with each other is a big part of it.
I think that's a good point, because I think one of the first rules is neither person knows more than the other about loving. There can't be one authority. You know, usually it looks like, you know, in a man-woman relationship, usually it looks like it's the woman who's saying, you don't know how to love. I'm going to show you how to love. I know how to love. I hold the secrets of love. Well, if you had the secrets of love, you wouldn't have picked him in the first place. Right? So that's clearly not true. At one point, you get to realize neither one of you have the secrets. Neither one is right, that you're going to be in this together. And the one thing you have, hopefully, is a commitment. What is the commitment? The commitment is to come back to each other and work on it again. It doesn't have to be a marriage. It could mean that whatever we're doing right here, whatever we do wrong, we're going to come back and work at it. We're going to come back and make it happen again. We're going to at least invest in this. We give each other at least some kind of commitment to come back again. No, now, with that as a foundation, then things begin to happen.
That's beautifully said.
You know, if we look at why are we together, and actually growing and deepening in love over 30 years, if we had to pick one thing, it probably would be that, Armand. We really chose not just each other, but chose marriage as a path together.
Because
that
longevity.
No matter what arises, we come back towards each other.
Time. I mean, what does that time element do? How do you take your anger seriously when you've been together 30 years? You get angry at each other. What are you going to do? I'm going to leave you? No.
You know, you learn that it passes like a summer thunderstorm.
Now, you see, that's, Robbie, a secret that people don't know unless they've been in it. If you're too young to know about time in relationship, if you're too long, or if you're just the kind of person who's never put the time in or had it in for a while with somebody who's really working on it with you, the one secret is it passes like a summer storm. And people don't know that. They don't imagine it. They think this is it. This is the tornado. It's going to wreck our home. But if you're angry at somebody you love, it's going to pass like a summer storm. You're going to be able to come back and replant whatever got uprooted. You know?
Right.
Listen.
Sometimes we talk about the two most important skills that we've learned. First was how to process, how to talk, how to move through issues that arose. And the second one, which took us many more years to learn, was when not to process, when to let it be, when to just let it rest and put your attention where you want it, where it's healing and helpful.
Well, one thing is for sure, if it's so heated, if there's so much fire under this that the only place you could go, it could become is volcanic, that's not going to be the moment.
Right.
The moment's not going to be when you're at your most heated. You know, if you're raging, if either person is screaming and yelling and that's the level of it, it's got to wait. It's got to take time. You can't get it from that place, I don't think. What do you think?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. It's that's an excellent time to kind of say, boy, sweetie, I'm listening to the sound of my own voice. I don't like what's coming out of my mouth. I don't want to treat you like this. How about let's take 10 minutes, let's do something else, let's come back together and see if we can get into a better space with each other and talk about it later.
And what Robert's just modeled there is also really important, that you don't go walking off in a storm, leaving the other person feeling completely abandoned. You actually make a conscious severance and say, you know, this is not serving us. We always try to look at whether any exchange we have is actually accruing benefit for us and have the courage to call it if it's not,
yeah.
If it has that tenor, that tone, that you're actually adding harm and wound into the field.
Well, I like the phrase, I don't like the way I'm feeling or I'm responding to what's happening. Don't even mention the other person.
Right.
I need to take the break for me. Listen, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Stay with us. This is getting exciting. We'll come back with the answer to how to make all love happy. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We've been listening to an interview with Robbie and Judith Gass, two friends of mine who we did this recording a while back. And this, they speak to the spirituality of relationships, a question that most people don't really think they address, and yet they address all the time. So what we're looking at is we're looking at the deeper layers of love and what's possible in the deeper layers of love. And it's such a lost world out there. And as I said before, I believe if more people could get a better hold on how they love and how they're being loved, the world would be a far more peaceful place. So we're going to take a short break, play some exquisite music, and when we come back, we'll be getting back to Robbie and Judith Gass, my friends. This is Armand DeMille. We'll be back in a few minutes.
To The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial.
Where gigolo and gigolette can take a kiss without regret, so they forget their broken dreams. You laugh tonight and cry tomorrow. When you behold your shattered dreams, and gigolo and gigolette awake to find their eyes are wet with tears that tell of broken dreams. Here is where you'll always find me, always walking up and down. But I left my soul behind me in an old cathedral town. The joy that you find here you borrow, you cannot keep it long, it seems. But gigolo and gigolette still sing a song and dance along Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Danced along that most of our lives. Eric Fromm, immature love says, I love you because I need you. Mature love says, I need you because I love you. I like what Sidney Poitier once said. We all suffer from the preoccupation that there exists in the loved one perfection. And then we have to deal with the fact that the perfection we're looking for is nowhere out there, but it's somewhere inside ourselves.
Here is where you always find me, always walking up and down. But I left my soul in an old cathedral town. The joy that you find here you borrow, you cannot keep it long, it seems. But gigolo and gigolette still sing a song and dance along the Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Diana Krall, K-R-A-L-L, The Boulevard of Broken Dreams. Ana Louise Strong, to fall in love is easy. Even to remain in it is not that difficult. Our human loneliness is cause enough. But it's a hard quest worth making to find a comrade through whose steady presence one can steadily become the person one desires to be. How can you help me be the person I desire to be? That's the real question that becomes the marriage vow. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
Beautiful quote.
Robbie Gass, Judith Gass, here we are now. Now, so we've got people caught in these dilemmas, and then you take them through these workshops. And I've kind of looked through the outline you sent me, which I really appreciated. There seem to be so many stages for trying to connect with each other, but what's the big point we're aiming at? We're aiming at fighting not only love and relationships, but we're looking for God.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I'd like to up the ante here.
Go for it.
All right. Instead of what we're going to do, which is the normal conversation about relationships, let's talk about the spirituality of this thing. Let's, you know, we talk about sex and we could talk about mating. We could talk about interactions and communications. But what does spirituality have to do with this whole thing?
So let's start with a story. And let's say the story takes place in India, because if it takes place in the Bronx, no one's interested, okay? So we'll say the story takes place in India. It concerns a yogi who goes into his cave and meditates for 7 years. And he comes out, and he's achieved, now he's the ultimate spiritual enlightenment. And all the villagers come from around because they want to hear the spiritual master talk about his enlightenment. And he starts talking about the many things about enlightenment. And all of a sudden, this young man in the back raised his hand and said, Sir, I have a question. In the 7 years in your cave in your enlightenment, what's the most extraordinary thing you experienced? And the yogi kind of scratches his head and thinks for a moment and says, the most extraordinary thing in 7 years, never once, did I experience anger. He goes on with his talk. Well, a few minutes later, the young man's waving his hand again. Sir, excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt, but, you know, I find that an extraordinary thing. Not once in 7 years did you ever experience anger? The yogi stops what he's saying and says, yes. As I said, not once in 7 years did I experience anger. He tries to go on with his talk. Well, 5 minutes later, the young man waves his hand again. Sir, I don't mean to be rude, but I find this so hard to believe. I can barely believe it. Is this really true? Not even once in 7 years? What do you take me for, a liar? So, you know, we get this concept that the spiritual path is kind of going off to a...
Oops.
We get very high, and we have these enlightenment experiences, and, you know, then we come back from the workshop, and we're in life, and all of a sudden we have all this stuff to deal with. You know, we're Westerners. We're here, you know, trying to make a living, raising our kids, you know, renting apartments, having families, having marriages. You know, our spiritual path has to be right here. It's not separate from that. It's not church. It's not Sunday. It's our spiritual path has to be the whole thing, our whole life. And Judith and I passionately believe, and again, really our entire marriage has been based on this, is that by turning, as you said so beautifully earlier before the break, by turning again and again to each other and throwing ourselves into the maelstrom of relationship with our hearts open, seeking to find God in each other and in ourselves, that this is a spiritual path that makes sense for Westerners. It's right here.
You know, Armand, it's a hot path. You know, it's full of fire, and it's really rich in that way. As we've talked earlier in the show, no one else can push your buttons, can bring up your stuff, your irritation, your anger, your neuroses, your abandonment fears, as much as your partner. And if we think of that as that is the pebbles on the path of the spiritual path, it's those energies in us that we need to learn how to be at ease and at peace and move through, then marriage, when you're really doing it in a conscious way, brings to your attention those things over and over. And if you don't run, if you don't run from your own responsibility, if you don't run from being authentic and real with your partner, if you keep your commitment going, if you are willing to work on learning the skills both for your own process as well as in the marriage, then the road is incredibly rich, and ultimately you can become, and not even ultimately, along the way, you become spiritual friends for each other to help each other become the deepest and best you that you can be.
Armand DeMille here. Let people know we're talking with Robbie Gass and Judith Gass about relationships. This is The Positive Mind. The reason you may hear the voices fading a little is we're traveling many miles. Where are you guys, in Colorado?
Boulder, yeah.
Boulder, Colorado,
coming to New York, coming to uptown New York, transmitting back downtown, back up through the airwaves into your ears, my friend. Coming into your ears. You know, I mean, it's just an amazing concept. I don't think we're going to take calls because I think you have so much to say. Tomorrow, I will open up these phones to a lot of callers about this and what they're going to respond to. But I know that there are even people hanging on the line dying to ask us questions, but I've got too many questions.
Hey, it's your show, Armand. You get to do it.
Right. Listen, Robbie, Judith, they talk about spirituality. They talk about God. What does that mean? Does that mean that when you're talking to each other and you're looking in each other's eyes, you see the universe? You don't just see the other person, but you could go beyond it. You can go through that, not into their only into their being, but you could feel your own connection to the universe through the other person. Is that what spirituality is? Or is it some other form of that? Is it tapping out of yourself to be able to embrace everything around you? What is it?
But, you know, I think it's all those things. And let me just talk. It is both a very, very grounded process of acting in kind and conscious and loving ways towards our loved ones and to anyone around us. That is spirituality. That, for me, is very strongly bringing the divine presence into form. In the Jewish Kabbalah, the mystical teachings of Judaism, it's taught that when God made the vessel of the world, it was so intense with the light and presence of the divine that it shattered into millions of shards, and that it is the work of human beings to reclaim those shards that are full of divine light and to bring the repair of the world. And if we, and that's just an image that has always been very potent for me. So then if we think, well, what is my work? What are my shards full of light, full of divine light? Then it may be our work in the world, it may be our parenting, it may be how we are in our friendships, and it's certainly how we are in our marriage, that we're bringing divine light through the manifestation of form into our marriages. And so it's, yes, it's like, what can I do to help you? Can I get you a cup of tea? You look tired, would you like a massage? It's that. And then it's those wonderful transcendent moments where you're able to look into each other's eyes. And as you say, see beyond the personality, see beyond the individual human, and feel that union with the energy of spirit that's present in all things.
Now you teach a way to go in there, and when you're doing your workshops, I know you include something funny that people wouldn't be used to, which is chanting. Now, how does chanting help people? I don't know, you know, I mean, it's we're not talking about mild stuff. We're talking about being able to tap into some part of us that responds to the beauty of something like this. You know, I take this, by the way, from the wonderful album of the World Chant, album called Chant, actually. Touched you when I played that one, right?
Yeah, I love this one.
Think that I know, because I did too.
It's not my favorite.
Well, let's talk about it. What does this have to do with relationships?
So, when we're talking about spirituality, the great barrier to being with God is this kind of close sense of, smallest sense of me, I, me, where the whole, we put a boundary, a shell around ourselves and think that we are separate from life, that we're separate from each other, that we're separate from God. And chanting is a very practical, actually down-to-earth way of experiencing where the boundary between me and you, between me and the person, that people that I'm chanting with, we become soft, we become porous. All of a sudden, our voice joins with other voices. And in a very real, down-to-earth way, we start to experience a sense of connectedness, that we are one in the sound. It starts off like, oh, yes, I'm singing, I'm chanting, but all of a sudden, we're chanting. And it is very much like the model of relationship. We come into relationship, and then we go even deeper, where it's that boundary between me chanting and you chanting. We're chanting together. There is only the chant, and the chant sings through us. And there's only spirit, and spirit breathes through us. And there's only spirit, and spirit makes love through us.
Well, I know we haven't rehearsed this, and I know that it's probably the strangest thing in the world to think of doing on telephones going across the airs between the two of you. But since you're Mr. and Mrs. Chant, why don't we get an idea of it? I know it's not, you know, you're not your normal thing, but this is WBAI 99.5 FM.
We could actually sing to you a song that we've been singing to each other and with each other for months. Very, very, very fresh in our lives.
I'd like to hear it.
We could sing you a verse. It's
our current favorite love song.
Great. First time heard on WBAI, Robbie Guess, Judith Guess. Let's hear it.
Light a candle.
Okay.
Light a candle just for you. In my heart. Light a candle. Light a candle. Deep within.
You're my lover.
You're my lover. You're my friend. You're my beginning and my end. How I love you, how I love you. Holy lover, sacred friend.
Now, Now, when you do that, Robbie, when that happens, you melt, don't you?
Yes. That's exactly the word.
Even though we're sitting in different rooms on different floors of a house on the telephone.
Yeah, I heard you. I heard that. Yeah, guys, I heard the whatever orgasm is.
Well, we were making love. That is making love.
We did that on the air, huh?
Yeah.
And it's true. And, you know, the chant really opens that space, but there are all kinds of practices and remembrances that we can do to walk in to that place together.
What other kind of things can you do?
I believe we are so deeply nourished. You know, there are breathing practices, eye-gazing practices.
Ballroom dancing.
We've been learning tango and contact improv. Mm-hmm. Going out in nature and sitting in a beautiful place. Taking the time just to be quiet and put some beautiful music on.
Foot rubs.
To bathe each other, to feed each other. Literally feed each other. Make the person's favorite food and lie them down on a pillow and just morsel by morsel.
Okay.
Are you ready for that?
wait, just about 10 more minutes, okay?
Okay.
Then send some up here, would you? Will the food fit in a fax machine? Now, listen. Listen now. What about the eye gazing? Go ahead, talk about it. How do you do it? I don't think anybody's done that recently. I think that's 15 years ago we remembered talking about it.
Right.
Let's talk about it.
Okay,
Trespasso.
Well, you know, almost everybody's had moments where your eyes have just met someone, and in that space, time dissolves, space dissolves, personality dissolves. And for most people, that will happen occasionally. There'll be just a few seconds of that. You can actually cultivate that experience. The way that you would do that is you would set up a time with your partner, and this is to actually learn and do the practice, but then it became quite second nature. And you would sit opposite each other at a comfortable distance.
Wait. Let's just hold that one for a minute.
Okay, you got it.
I think important in that is to consider also that there may be a slight discomfort with any of these, and you as partner, if the other person wanders, it's perfectly okay. You're loving them if they have to look away, if they have to close their eyes, if they can't be there with you. It doesn't matter. You don't command, you don't demand, you don't do anything. You just see.
This one goes all over the place, too, Armin. You may end up hysterically laughing beyond, you can't stop laughing. Probably just so much energy gets raised, that's one place it goes sometimes.
Uh-huh. So no matter where it goes, there's not a rule. And sometimes what I've seen couples sit down where the man starts demanding or the woman starts demanding, we're going to look at each other's eyes, and I'm staring at you, and it goes from looking to staring. Now,
right.
Staring is different than looking.
We always talk about it's a soft focus. It's like almost like your eyes are very relaxed and half-focused. Mm-hmm. So it's an allowing. It's just seeing what happens. What is the natural energy that happens when your eyes meet rather than trying to make anything happen? And it can be different every time. Sometimes it can be playful. It might be erotic. It might be, you know, serious and spiritual. It might be nothing.
A lot of masters or teachers have said that you look across the eyes. You're saying left to left or right to right, right? But you're not.
Most people have a dominant eye, so typically for most people, they'll be looking with their right eye into their partner's left eye. But most people look more out of one eye than the other, and usually it's the right eye.
Mm-hmm. But why wouldn't somebody be looking in their right eye to their partner's right eye?
And when you do that, you'll sometimes actually have an experience of confrontation.
So left eye to left eye is usually the softer spot.
Look towards your partner's left eye. I don't think you have to worry about which eye you're looking out of. Sort of let that happen naturally. But I think to focus your gaze into your partner's left eye.
I see. So the person who's looking doesn't have to wonder what eye they're looking out of.
Exactly.
Right. All right, it's important. I tell you. So you're not just looking out of your right eye at their left eye.
No.
You're looking with both your eyes.
It's like you're hanging out. You're not... As you said, Armin, the whole key is not to try to make anything particular happen, but just to bring yourself together and see what's there.
And sometimes out of this process, in our workshops as well as certainly in our own lives, after several minutes of this and kind of softening into this energy, we might start a process where we would be taking turns speaking, just simply asking each other a question, show me your heart, where we have a chance to just have loving attention from the other person for whatever's present for us. It's also a wonderful way to start lovemaking. It's from that place of deep connection. And then see, what is the touch that really naturally arises?
Thank you so much, Judith and Robbie Gass. Thanks for being with us. So we have to be going now, my friends. You've been listening to Robbie Gass and Judith Gass, friends of mine.
also creators of great music, G-A-S-S. You can search it on the internet. You'll find lots of references. I will be back with you shortly. If you wanted to get a copy of today's program, you wanted to hear it again, you can go to WBAI.org. There's archives there, or you can go to thepositivemind.com. If you go to thepositivemind.com and you look at the website, I'd love you to send me an email letting me know your response to these programs and the people that you hear on the program. You can also post on Facebook. I'll be back with you shortly, my friends. Here's a lot of love to all of you. Hey there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Having been a little under the weather, as we all have, huh? Well, help us with our recovery. Go to WBAI.org and help us by joining the Buddy System. The more people we have on a recurrent basis giving money to the station, the less we'll have to have fund drives. Help us cut down on those, and we'll do what we can for you. WBAI.org, Buddy. Make a difference.